Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown, here with co-host Meredith DeFrancesco. Today we'll be talking with Bjorn Skoppen Claassen of the Bangor Clean Clothes Campaign and PICA, the Peace Through International Through Inter-American Community Action, for an update on the work those groups have been doing. But first, we have some upcoming events to tell you about today. There will be a Bangor Living Wage Campaign meeting Monday evening, March 27th, from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Greater Bangor Central Labor Council Hall at 20 Ayer Street in Brewer. The meeting is described as an exciting hands-on power analysis and strategy planning session and will be led by the Maine People's Alliance and the Derigo Alliance. Everyone is welcome. For more information, contact Roxanne Munsgaard at 947-6424.
On Friday, March 22nd, an international tour of speakers will be in Bangor, sponsored by PICA, the Bangor El Salvador Sister Project, the Maine Global Action Network, Peace and Justice Center of Eastern Maine, the Greater Bangor Area Central Labor Council, and the Unitarian Universalist Church. Speakers include from Mexico, Marcela Rodriguez, a union worker from the custom trim strike in Mexico. From Brazil, David Kane, a Maranhão lay missioner working on Brazilian FTAA referendum. And from the U.S., Marceline White from the Coalition for Women's Economic Development and Tom Hansen from the Alliance for Responsible Trade and the Mexico Solidarity Project. Plus, there will be community speakers representing laid-off workers from the Saucony Shoe, rural immigrant workers from Maine Rural Workers Association, the Families on Welfare from Maine's Association of Independent Neighborhoods, and union workers from the Maine Central Labor Council. The topic is free trade in the Americas, how it affects and afflicts all of us, but especially some of us, across borders and within our community. The focus is fast-track authority, which gives quote, which gives George Bush sole authority to negotiate the free trade agreement for the Americas up for congressional approval in April, and the goal, quote, community action, to attach health insurance support for displaced workers to trade legislation. This can critically affect fast-track authority. And there will be discussion after the speakers. This is Friday, March 22nd on 120 Park Street, Bangor at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 6 p.m. potluck, 7 to 9 p.m. is the program. For more information, call 947-4203.
And Maine Indie Media has asked us to let you all know that there will be a demonstration in protest of FCC policies in New York City on March 22nd. The protesters plan to demand that the FCC meet the following demands. Number one, that the FCC shall serve public interest by dismantling the monopolistic concentration of media and communication systems. Two, the FCC shall serve public interest by promoting information as a worldwide common good. This shall include defending public airwaves from privatization and dismantling any intellectual property policies that act to prohibit the sharing of knowledge. Number three, the FCC shall serve public interest by supporting and encouraging the creation of media content that respects pluralism and diversity of expression and balance in terms of gender, race, culture, language, and geographical region. Number four, the FCC shall serve public interest by promoting the creative, widespread use of interactive technologies in such a way that these technologies are open to all and do not create further new sources of social fragmentation. Five, the FCC shall serve public interest by defending civil liberties and privacy from all invasive use of surveillance technology. And six, the FCC shall serve public interest by banning advertising during children's television programs and by supporting the taxation on all advertising aimed at adults. For more information about this protest, which will be once again in New York City on March 22nd, you can contact Maine Indie Media. You can check their website at www.maineindiemedia.org or the next issue of their print publication, The Maine Commons.
Now for today's program. The Bangor Clean Clothes Campaign has gained a lot of publicity in the past years since its inception concerning its rigorous community-based work against the use of sweatshop labor in the apparel industry. The Clean Clothes Campaign is one of the projects of PICA, standing now for Peace Through Inter-American Community Action. The Clean Clothes Campaign's work has included working on making Bangor, Maine the first in the nation to adopt a clean clothes resolution, aiding Bangor and Orono to exercise purchasing resolutions demanding disclosure from apparel suppliers to the city government, and last year working on the passage of the State of Maine Anti-Sweatshop Purchasing Law, the first in the nation. The Clean Clothes Campaign also does outreach, including numerous slideshow talks to hundreds of organizations and classrooms, and periodically hosts speaking tours by sweatshop workers from other countries. A large part of the campaign are the clean clothes retailers. Currently, those more than 40 local businesses have made a commitment to ask specific questions of their supplying companies about the working conditions their products are made under. Their goal is to gain information to pass on to their customers. Recently, the Bangor Clean Clothes Campaign has published its shopping guide, a public listing of companies that sell to local retailers who are making steps to disclose their working conditions. We have with us today by phone line Bjorn Skorpen Klassen of PICA and organizer of the Bangor Clean Clothes Campaign. Welcome, Bjorn.
Hi, Bjorn.
Hi, thank you very much.
Great. We'll be talking about the shopping guide and some other aspects of the campaign a little later. But first, let's put this issue of sweatshop labor within a local global context. Maine has seen the rapid dissipation of the shoe industry, jobs that have admittedly gone to countries where labor is cheaper and labor conditions are known to be terrible. One of the primary locations has been China. Could you talk with us about this?
Oh, sure, I'd love to. I want to thank you, though. That was a great summary of the Bangor Clean Clothes Campaign.
Great.
I have to borrow that from you.
Great.
So we've heard earlier on this program how in recent months some 700 Maine shoe workers have been losing their jobs. There are 560 workers at Dexter Shoe, 110 at Saucony, and very recently 60 at Ansone Shoes. And what's important to remember here, again, that the companies are not going bankrupt, but they're shifting, as you said, their production to China. They're moving the jobs to China. And that's part, of course, of an overall trend in the U.S. We have lost, in the 1990s, we lost 37,900 shoe jobs in this country. Most went to China. And that means that the companies now who produce their shoes in China rather than in the U.S. pay about 3% of the wages they used to pay here. That is $9.32 an hour jobs have been replaced with 25 cent an hour jobs. And Dexter Shoe, in fact, is even shifting their shoe production from the Dominican Republic, where a lot of Maine shoe jobs used to go to up until recently, moving them also to China. So the question that I wanted to ask, that I've been asking myself here is, you know, is this good for China? Is it good for Chinese workers? And we know how workers in Maine are suffering. What about the 700 Chinese workers who now have jobs? You know, can we assume that they go up, you know, they benefit as we go down? And I think this question is important for another reason, too, because I think it's really important to know what happens in China, because China is already the world's seventh largest economy and growing, and China will have a huge impact on the global economy, because the global economy is one that tends to equalize, it tends to harmonize conditions everywhere on the globe to the lowest common denominator. Mm-hmm. So finding out what's happening in China may be a preview of coming attractions. So I'm a little bit at a disadvantage, of course, because I'm not the expert on China, and you know, few people are, because it is hard to find out what's going on there. But I have read some studies by non-governmental organizations. But what I wanted to do for this show, I thought it would be interesting to look at what the corporations themselves are saying.
Great.
So what I did is looked back, and this is already 2 years ago now. It seems more recent. But I looked back 2 years ago when there was a huge corporate push in Congress for China to get the permanent most favored nation status, or what they renamed permanent normal trade relations status. What that meant is that, and they were successful, so this happened, that Congress stopped reviewing the human and workers' rights, environmental protection, religious freedom, and democracy records in China every year. Basically what they said, now our commerce can flow freely to China without considering those issues. Mm-hmm. And this was it was a huge corporate campaign. They spent $10 million on this, and any number of business coalition participated. And the reason I want to go back to this is it's so important to remember that this fight, this corporate push, was especially, what was at stake here was not U.S. companies' ability to export goods to China, but what it was especially important for was U.S. firms who wanted to relocate production to China to make so that they could make sure that they could always re-import finished goods to the U.S. markets, for example, shoes. Mm-hmm. Right. So in other words, they didn't want to be stuck producing in China, then find that one day when Congress reviewed China's human rights records had restricted trade and would not be able to then re-import their finished goods back to the U.S. So it's, in other words, it's not just a natural flow that we're seeing here when main jobs are going to China. Mm-hmm. This has been deliberately engineered and created.
Yeah, go ahead.
No.
And you were talking about some of the publicity or some of the statements that the corporations were making at that time.
Right, because that was so interesting to see that, because the corporate lobby, if you look at the corporate lobbyists, they had to deal with their own kind of long-standing resistance to have any dealings with Red China, the communist China, right? So okay. What they had to do and what they did was to argue for trade with China, not just on economic grounds, but on humanitarian grounds. And basically what they're saying is that U.S. companies that relocate and operate in China, they become beacons of light in China. They spread respect for human rights and for women's rights, workers' rights, and democratic freedoms just by their own example.
Which, of course, is not what we've been hearing back from other places where U.S. companies have exported jobs. The maquiladoras, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were calling these islands of freedom, is that correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And what is the reality there, then?
Well, they're partially correct. What they meant by islands of freedom, this is a quote from the Business Coalition for U.S.-China Trade. What they were talking about there was they're saying that they're talking about workers who leave China's what they call iron rice bowl, in other words, the farms, the countryside, the rural sector, to migrate to southern China, where the private enterprises, where they the assembly zones, the factories there, they say represent islands of freedoms that attract workers who seek to escape, this iron rice bowl and the state-owned enterprises.
It'd be interesting to know who came up with those terms. That's
would
so
be wonderful,
linguistically
wouldn't it?
Brilliant.
Well, a lot of this goes back to the Reagan era. Mm-hmm. Reagan already said, the freer the flow of world trade, the stronger the ties of human progress and peace among mm-hmm. nations. So islands of freedom, well, they're partially correct, it turns out, because in a very real sense, these assembly, factory zones where our shoes now are being made, they may not be islands of freedom, but they are islands. And I think this is a really important image to bear in mind here, because this is a group called Verité. They're an independent human rights monitor. They've done over 4,000 confidential worker interviews in South China, and what they have found is that the workers there, basically, what they're becoming is a perfect contingent workforce for global corporations. They say the workers are rural migrants. They're women, 17 to 25 years old. They're among 100 million peasants who are uprooted from the farms, that is the iron rice bowls, right, who are then recruited by the factories. They're enticed by the promise of high wages. And Verity says these workers come to the southern part of China, where their whole lives revolves around the factory, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They have no relations and no life beyond the factory. All their friends are co-workers. The factories are in cities, but the workers are completely disconnected from city life. So they spend all their free time in the factory compound, or just outside the gates of the factories where there are local food markets. They know absolutely nothing about the local labor laws. the minimum wage or overtime regulations. They have no social safety net. Their legal status is as migrant workers, right? They're Chinese, but they're migrant workers. They have a temporary residency permit, which is conditioned upon their continued employment. So if they lose their jobs, then they have to also have to leave the area, right? And the employers see them as an expendable short-term source of labor. In other words, you know, young women who are coming for a short period of time can be intensively exploited, and then when they're used up and they're worn out, they return to the countryside and are replaced by a fresh crop of young women.
And the turnover is because the rapid turnover is because of the harsh conditions in the factories.
In unbelievable exploitation. That's been widely documented.
Have there been reports back, like we've had from other places, of the types of treatment that's going on within the factories, in addition to the long hours and the low wages? People in other countries have heard stories of women being not allowed to use the bathroom, having to sleep under sewing machines, being fired because they're pregnant, being forced to demonstrate when they're menstruating, just really embarrassing, humiliating conditions. Have you heard reports back of those types of abuses within the factories too?
Well, yes, of course, it's very difficult to find out exactly what's happening precisely because the companies don't tell us what factories they're using, and they're not forced to disclose that kind of information. However, a couple of different sources. One is actually a newspaper from southern China. It's called the Yangcheng Evening News. This was an article that was translated by Verity, the human rights organization that I mentioned. Just as an example, an incident that's reported on. They said that this was a year ago, July 2001. At that time, they reported on a couple of what they called suspicious deaths of two workers at the Nangang Shoe Factory in Guangdong in southern China. One worker was found in a coma in his dormitory bed on the morning of June 28th, and he was rushed to a hospital and died from cerebral hemorrhage. The very same day, that happened to another worker. She fell unconscious on the production line. And here's a quote from the investigating reporter. He found that workers toil 14 to 16 hours a day in an environment without air conditioners, sweat pouring off them like rain. The stinging odor of glue permeates the entire workshop, but it's too hot to wear masks, and the cotton gloves don't last long before being eaten away due to the corrosiveness of the organic solvent in the glue. And he talked to a co-worker of one of the workers who died. This worker's name was, the worker who died was, her name was Yao Fangmei. The co-worker said that when Yao Fangmei fell unconscious on the production line, there were customers who were visiting the workshop, so Yao Fangmei was moved to a nearby storage area for a while before being sent to the hospital. It's not easy to hear.
And many, many stories like this.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And clearly, and this is really a metaphor for what's. I mean, this Yao Fangmei, who falls unconscious, moved to storage area, is the perfect face for the global economy, where these kind of abuses are always hidden from us.
Let's talk a little bit about what the Bangor Clean Clothes campaign is doing locally, talking about disclosure and asking companies the questions, consumers and retailers demanding to know what the conditions are where where their garments they're buying are being made. Can you talk a little bit about the shopping guide and the organizing you're doing around that?
Sure.
You can do it briefly because we are quickly wrapping up.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, just as a general point, people can do a lot. There are lots of ways for people to get involved. And if people are interested, you know, please get in touch with us, and we can talk. The important thing here is to get involved, to organize. You know, if you're a student, you can organize on your campus or in your school. If you are belong to a congregation, you can organize in your church. If you're a worker, you can organize in your workplace. And, you know, if you're a consumer, as most of us are to some extent, we've created the Clean Clothes Shopping Guide, which shows how buying or shopping, you know, this kind of mundane activity can actually be something that we do together, that we can do as a community, not isolated from one another, and how we can create pressure on corporations together to respect human rights. So the shopping guide, which people can get just by, I will give our contact information later. What that does is, in brief, it lists places where workers are treated with dignity and respect, because there are those kind of places, and there are many great stories behind the shopping guide that we don't have, you know, time to go into now in detail. But you know, there's stories of how workers have used unions to organize for respect and dignity on their job, or how workers have formed worker-owned cooperatives, and you know, so that they have a say in how they're being treated. The shopping guide lists the companies. This is the criteria here, right? For a company to be listed in the shopping guide, they've got to disclose. They have to say exactly where they're producing, what's the factory they're using, and what are conditions. They, you know, they can't hide that kind of information, and that's not something that companies like to disclose. That's a big reason why companies like to go to China. They can hide their factories in factories halfway around the globe. But together we have found, when we pool our purchasing power, pool our consumer power as bulk purchasers, we can have that impact. We can persuade companies to disclose that sometimes.
And the guide has been a forum for approaching these companies and asking for disclosure, and you often do it on the behalf of the clean clothes retailers who are
part of the
group as well. And you do have these guides. You also have clean clothes organizing guides, and people. Am I correct that you are looking for more people to help with this sort of research?
Because always we're looking for people. I mean, the PICA is a membership-based organization. We're volunteer-driven. Please, if you're at all interested in finding out what you can do to end sweatshops and to create a more humane global economy that where people have a say, that's driven bottom-up more than top-down from corporations, then please give us a call. Send us an email, and we'll talk.
And what are those? What's that contact information now? Because we're about at that time.
All right. The phone number is 947-4203. We have a website. It's www.pica, that's P-I-C-A, .ws. That stands for website, pica.ws. And our email is info@pica.ws.
And of the many events that the PICA involves themselves coming up is the FTAA caravan, a much-needed fund drive, and also a Pete Seeger concert this summer. Is that right?
That is correct. So,
we'll keep us posted.
Yes, the FTAA public hearing coming up very shortly is Friday, March 22nd. FTAA, we shouldn't speak in acronyms. FTAA is the extension of NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, to the whole Western Hemisphere. It stands for the Free Trade Area of the Americas.
Great, Bjorn. Yep. We're going to have to end
it
there. But thank you very much. Hopefully we'll get to talk to you again.
All right.
Bjorn.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. So watch a shadow man on TV lie to keep his job at his command. The streets are gassed until you couldn't breathe. The angry mob were mostly people sitting down in front of cops who carried water cannons, plastic bullets, shields, and masks while folks carried on by food and beer and mailboxes you could pull upon. A shirt of cloth to let you breathe. The stores are open just like any other day. Hoses hung out on St. John from families that left them on for you to drink or wash. Somebody overcome by fumes could go inside the crowded bar with bottles of vinegar lined up to pour upon a shirt of cloth to let you breathe like any other day, except the people loved each other just for being there. You should have seen the strangers kneel to help someone to throw themselves onto that ugly fence and clash with rocks and gas and water to tear it down and then just sit still in front of the open space, which quickly filled with riot cops who faced their population but would not look you in the eye. As the night wore on, the jails filled up, cops dressed like protesters beat some up in air so thick you couldn't breathe. They bombed their toxins off the overpass, hitting people in the face. You couldn't even be inside without that shit burning your eyes. You get so mad you want to puke. You hear they hit the medical center and you know this is depravity. Behind the fence, they had to stop their talks when tear gas got into their vans. A joke to think of the conditions in which the protests carried on, buying food and Kleenex, kneeling down to help each other, dance a song amid the putrid air. But then people loved each other just for being there. When they thought they'd had enough of the folks sitting down and running shops who just happened to live there buying Kleenex, beer, and food, they opened fire as I turned around. I thought of people dead before I was born. Shit, this is how it is. You hit the pavement, shot by someone with a family to feed. And some kids held rocks in their hands, but store owners had more to lose from corporate chains than the odd vandal, and they knew it. So if you want to step inside, there's a little better French and English side by side with Argentinians. A guy played bagpipes in a gas mask. In the memory of the phobic stare, the fires, the tears, the putrid air come up every time I see someone buying beer, Kleenex, food, or Mylox, who owns a store, smoking a cigarette, drinking water, chewing gum, or doing anything at all. As soldiers who return from war must dread the violent dreams and more the thought of living in an indifferent world, and you've seen and felt so much in common with strangers. Now and again, this deep despair just chokes me like that poisoned air, soothed only by the choice to care and the hope that we can love each other just for being there.
That was Shot Across the Bow by Chris Brown from the Gas CD compilation. You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Meredith DeFrancesco.
And I'm Amy Brown.
We'd like to thank Helen York for engineering, Andy Buckley for web support, and our guest Bjorn Claussen, and you for listening and acting. You can reach us here at WERU or by emailing radioactivenews@hotmail.com. You can listen to archived Radioactive programs on our website, www.freespeech.org/RAN, or at main.indymedia.org. Join us again next Thursday and stay tuned now for Free Speech Radio News, then Democracy Now!